So we started in Numbers and Exodus, talking about the establishment of the priesthood. 1 Samuel, 1 Chronicles, at that point we're getting into the period of the monarchy. We went through that, we went through the prophets, all right? And ultimately, where you end at the end of the prophets is you've got Jeremiah and Ezekiel promising the perpetuality of a priesthood. Jeremiah, it's linked very much with the promise of king, right? There's Jeremiah is expecting Jerusalem to fall, right? He's very clear on that. Jerusalem is going to fall, but God will remember and reestablish your king, reestablish your priests. Ezekiel says, you know, both. But also, he focuses specifically, at least in these cases, on the priesthood side of things. Talks about the line of Zadok. And so it was through the line of Zadok that you get, ultimately, the high priest when you get to Levites and priesthood number two. So if you look at Levites and priesthood number two, Ezra and Nehemiah is the story of post-exile, right? The Jews were in Babylon for roughly 70 years. All right. This is mentioned in Daniel, for example. If you'll look at Daniel's great prayer, you will see he talks about that 70 years and asks God to redeem his people. Ezra and Nehemiah are the two books that we have that cover some of this period in the land and about the reestablishment of the temple and of the walls. Those are the two big things that need to be rebuilt. The temple so the worship can commence. And why do you need walls? Pesky pagans. They want to kill you. Walls help a lot, right? So in Nehemiah, the rebuilding of the walls is super important. So we're in Nehemiah, all right? And so what we're going to do after this point is you leave the biblical record for a while. If you want to talk about priesthood and stuff, you just have to leave the Bible, because there's a several hundred year period where we don't have anything, at least in the Protestant canon of Scripture, that includes history in the meantime. So let's look at Nehemiah, and we're going to look at the end of Nehemiah. And so what we're going to be talking about today is various things that happened related to the priesthood and the temple, and we're going to see some of the corruptions that were related to the priesthood and the temple. That's with, Nehemiah 13, verse 23. You see various things in Nehemiah where it switches from narrative into a prayer, where Nehemiah switches into praying to God to bless him, to help him fix what's going on. And this is one of those cases. Nehemiah 13, 23. If you guys will help me read a few verses at a time, Jonathan.
In those days also, I saw the Jews who had married women of Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab. And half of their children spoke the language of Ashdod, and they could not speak the language of Judah, but only the language of each people.
And I confronted them, and cursed them, and beat some of them, and pulled out their hair. And I made them take an oath in the name of God, saying, "You shall not give your daughters to their sons, or take their daughters for your sons, or for yourselves."
Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin by these things? Yet among many nations was there no king like him, who was beloved of his God, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, even him did outlandish women cause to sin.
Must we hear now that you too are doing all this terrible wickedness and are being unfaithful to our God by marrying foreign women?
One of the sons of Jehoiada, the son of Elisha, the high priest, was a son-in-law of Sanballat, the Horonite, so I chased him away from thee. O my God, remember them, because they have defiled the priesthood and the covenant of the priesthood and the Levites.
Thus cleansed I them from all strangers, and appointed the wards of the priests and the Levites, every one in his business, and for the wood offering at times of holiness, and for the first fruits. Remember me, O my God, forgive.
So somebody restate succinctly. What's the problem that Nehemiah is fixing?
Marrying foreign women.
Why is marrying a foreign woman a problem?
Taking nature away from God's considering idolatry.
Right. The problem with foreign women is that they worship other gods, chances are. And so therefore, if you marry this foreign woman, all right, she could lead you astray. Now, does this mean you can't marry a foreigner? Well, I know a lot of you are married, but for those, you know, can you marry a foreigner? Is the Bible here saying you can't marry foreigners? No, this misses the point, right? The point is, these were foreigners who worshipped other gods, all right? The general principle that Paul picks up later, do not be unequally yoked with somebody else. This is this exact principle, all right? If you want to marry a foreigner, fine. If they're a Christian, okay, cool. If they're not, well, then this is exactly the problem. Now, Nehemiah is specifically concerned here with the priesthood. And this is not the only time in Ezra and Nehemiah where we have this problem. And so this is an issue because you've had, of course, a subset of the Israelites, Judah, Benjamin, most of the priests in Babylon, right? They come back. During the time, there's a lot of intermixing between people, but also there's problems with them when they come back to intermix with the foreigners who are there. All right, because usually, whenever a foreign, we talked about this, whenever a foreign nation conquers you, all right, in the ancient world, they will frequently take a lot of your educated rich people away, but then replace them with other people. All right. Because it's not like you want to take all the people out of the land. You still want people there. But by scattering them, right, and separating the rich from the land, you make it much less likely for people to revolt. It's a very practical thing. The Romans did this all the time. It's a very practical way of dealing with people that you conquer. And so this is a problem that Nehemiah has to deal with when he comes back. And it is a problem. And so what one of the corruptions, potentially of the priesthood, would be for people to deal with and get in relations with foreign women. Of course, the priesthood was male, and so therefore that's why the problem there would be foreign women. Would it be bad for an Israelite woman to marry a foreign man? Well, I mean, I think you're going to have the same principle, generally speaking. The problem, then, is, and this is a good word for you kiddos to know, all right, syncretism. Does somebody know what syncretism means? Okay, you adult people should know it too. Syncretize, all right? Not synchronize. Different. Syncretize would be what?
Like synthesize.
It's
together two ideas.
Usually, syncretism is usually, right, meaning meant to have a negative connotation. Syncretism would be a Christian marries a Buddhist and they come out with some hybrid Christian Buddhist thing. That's syncretism. That's combining. All right, that's combining one religion with another. All right, in this particular case, Nehemiah is battling Judaism with whatever stuff the people that Babylonians brought in is whatever they're peddling. All right, whenever we get to the Maccabean revolt here in a few minutes, syncretism is the problem, but it's different. It's syncretism between Judaism and the Greeks and Greek religion. Okay. So, in terms of potential problems in the priesthood, all right, potential problems in the priesthood could mean high priests not being appointed according to the appropriate line, which is not yet a problem, all right. This is something that will come up very soon. And also various other things, like the priests not doing their jobs, the priests marrying foreign women, and so forth, all right. Now, if you look at your sheet in Levites and Priesthood number 2, the next reading we have is actually from Josephus. Now, two notes, all right? So once you get past the end of the Old Testament books, like Nehemiah, Ezra, Esther, Daniel, you've got a period of time where we don't have Bible, okay? Two great sources. One would be the Apocrypha. Now, the Apocrypha is a collection of books that came through, ultimately, the Septuagint. If you ever see a copy of the Septuagint and you don't have one, pick one up. Because if you do, you will get a copy of the Apocrypha. That's how the Apocrypha came into the Christian church. And why it's in some Christian Bibles. The Septuagint meaning the what?
70.
This is the 70. This is the Greek translation of the Old Testament scriptures. The collection of that was the Septuagint in the early church contained what is the books that are called the Apocrypha. Okay? Now, also in terms of terms, Apocrypha is officially the worst word you could possibly apply to these books, even though that is the traditional word. Okay? It is descriptive of nothing. Apocrypha means, apocryphal, means not mysterious or hidden. There's nothing mysterious about these books. There's nothing hidden about these books. These books have been public and have been used in the Christian church in some groups since the very beginning. All right, so there's literally nothing hidden or spooky about these books. All right, if you have, you can get English translations of the Septuagint, that's true too, of the Apocrypha in them, of your Bibles, in King James at least, RSV, in RSV, at least all three of those translations, right? They have editions with the Apocrypha, all right? There, I'm sure, are more. And of course, you can get separate translations entirely. Like this right here, this is like a study Bible, except for the Apocrypha, all right? We as Protestants don't consider this canonical. However, there is some generally good stuff in here, and also some historical stuff, which we'll be reading about today, from 1st and 2nd Maccabees. All right, super useful. If you want to copy with notes, this is really, really great. The other source we'll be pulling from today is Josephus. You can also get in a reasonably priced single volume. All right, both of these are also available for free online. So you don't actually have to pay anything to read any of those. So Josephus wrote several works. The two in particular that we'll be reading from over the next any time, really, will be his Antiquities of the Jews, where he recounts the history of Israel. And so that's what we're going to focus on here. And his War of the Jews. War of the Jews is super important about the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. It's all about that. Josephus, as most of you know, was a first century character. All right? Let's jump in. Josephus, Antiquities of the Jews, 11.7. All right? You will see in these texts, you will see actually two different parallel numbering systems. It is genuinely annoying, but it is the way it is. So you'll see 11.7.1, and then you'll see 297. Depending on what you look at, you will see either one or both of those numbering systems used. It is what it is. So we'll see lots of names in some places that we won't be familiar with. I'll explain the most important ones. All right. When Eliasib, the high priest, was dead, right, his son Judas succeeded in the high priesthood. And when he was dead, and this Judas, just so you know, this is not Judas Maccabee. We're not there yet in history. This is right after the events of Esther. When he was dead, his son John took the dignity, on whose account it was also that Bagoses, he was the general of another Artaxerxes army, so he was a Persian, Artaxerxes here being one of the Persian rulers, polluted the temple and imposed tributes on the Jews. That out of the public stock, before they offered the daily sacrifices, they should pay for every lamb 50 shekels. Now, Jesus was the brother of John. Now, Jesus is just an English rendition of what word? Joshua. And Judas, all right, you sound like Judah, right? Just normal Jewish names here. Bagoses, not a normal Jewish name, because he's not a Jew. Now, Jesus was the brother of John and was a friend of Bagoses. So you've got John, all right, who is a priest, all right? High priest, specifically, all right? Now, Jesus was the brother of John. So Jesus, or Joshua, could theoretically be the high priest at some point. It would fit within the high priestly line. Who had promised, so Jesus was the brother of John, was a friend of this Persian guy who had promised to procure him the high priesthood. Remember where we talked about how once you get a foreign nation or a king over the priesthood, the king can control for good or for ill. Who is the high priest? David did it. Solomon did it. All right. Good or for ill. Here we go. We've got John, who is the high priest, and Joshua / Jesus, who is not the high priest. And he makes a deal with Bagoses and say, I want to be high priest instead of my brother. All right. Is this appropriate? No, this is not good. In confidence of whose support of Bagoses, Joshua / Jesus quarreled with John in the temple and so provoked his brother. So they got in a fight. All right. So Jesus is going to be priesthood. And so he thinks he is. And so he's just getting all whatever. He's causing problems with his brother. So Jesus and John, once again, not Jesus of the New Testament. With John, not John of the New Testament, several hundred years earlier, in the temple, so provoked his brother that in his anger he slew him. Now it was a horrible thing for John, who is the high priest. All right, so we know who was actually killed here. Now it was a horrible thing for John when he was a high priest to perpetuate so great a crime, and so much more the horrible that never was so cruel and impious a thing done, neither by the Greeks nor barbarians. However, God did not neglect its punishment, but the people were on that very account enslaved, and the temple was polluted by the Persians. Okay. Let me recap. Let's talk about this basic idea, just as a form of corruption. You've now got, and this is the main point, you've got now, because there is a foreign nation involved in the temple, you've got people trying to become high priest. All right, why would you want to be high priest in Jerusalem? Well, unless you're a Persian, that's like the most powerful spot in the nation. All right, where's all the money? All right, when we're talking about post-exile, where's all the money in Judah? It's in the temple. That's your richest spot because people are sending in their money. All right. This is where the gifts are going. That's where all the money is. You want to be in the best spot in Judah. You become the high priest. And so here's Jesus wheeling and dealing, or Joshua wheeling and dealing to become the high priest. He makes a deal with the guy, but he makes his brother mad and his brother kills him. Okay. So no one is doing what they're supposed to do here, at least according to Josephus, right? No one is okay, all right? John should not have killed Jesus. And Jesus should not have tried to talk with the Persian to get the job, all right? Everything's bad. It's really terrible. So this is what you're going to see. And when ultimately we get to, hopefully next week, Herod, all right, we're going to see once more intrigues around the most holy office in the Jewish nation, the high priest, all right? And it's here too. So now we're going to jump forward. If you look at Antiquities of the Jews 12.5, this is quite a bit later. And so at the top of the page, you'll see your timeline. All right. At top of the page, 168 would be when this is essentially happening that we're about to read about. All right. Very famous event. I did want to reread it. I know we've talked about it, but I know some of you haven't really discussed it or read it. This is super important. Okay. Whenever the Persians got into power, right? The Persians defeated the Babylonians. Who defeated the Persians? Greece defeated the Persians. Alexander the Great, right? Alexander. And Daniel, he is the goat. All right. He is the goat who comes in and wipes out the Persians very quickly, which he did. He came and wiped out, he conquered almost everything that he could in 10 years. Very, very impressive, evil person. But that's him, all right? So when he dies, his empire splits up, and you've got the Ptolemies, all right? Ptolemy and the Seleucids. All right, in control. And they're fighting over Israel. Antiochus, who's the subject here, is a descendant of Seleucus. If you hear the word Antioch, if you're an ancient ruler and you own lots of things and you conquer places, what do you do? Well, you found lots of cities and named them after yourself or your wife or something like that. And so you've got Antiochus, female name, Antiochus, male names, things like that. Antioch, There's multiple Antiochs because of these guys. I mean, now, you know, if you want to put your name on a building, you just donate a lot of money to a hospital or to a university to get your name on a building. These guys would just found a whole city. So much better.
Can we put lots of money into the city so we get a whole city with our name on it?
If you get enough money, sure, you do it. Okay, so what's the problem? So the Jews are under foreign domination, all right, under the Babylonians. Partially under the Assyrians, then under the Babylonians, then under the Persians, and then under the Greeks. All right, and specifically the Seleucids. And Antiochus comes in as a part of his domination. Comes, and here's the event that we have right here in Antiquities of the Jews, 12.5, section 253. And then the king had built an idol altar upon God's altar. All right, this is in the temple. And he slew swine upon it. How often were Jews supposed to sacrifice pigs on the altar?
Never.
Never. Antiochus slew swine. Swine is pigs, for those who don't know. Okay? Bad. So offered sacrifice. So offered a sacrifice, neither according to the law, nor the Jewish religious worship in that country. He also compelled them, the Jews, to forsake the worship which they paid their own God, and to adore those whom he took to be gods, and made them build temples, and raise idol altars in every city and village, and offer swine upon them every day. This is forced syncretism. Alright? Well, really, just forced conversion sometimes. Alright? You've got the problem of both. Jews mixing too much with Hellenists, of Greeks, and then you've got some of them just saying, forget all the Judaism stuff. Go all in on Greek religion, and that's what Antiochus is trying to do. He also commanded them not to circumcise their sons, and threatened to punish any that should be found to have transgressed his injunction. He also appointed overseers who should compel them to do what he commanded. All right? And so Antiochus comes in, he defiles the temple. All right? This is a precursor to Hanukkah, where Hanukkah is what? Do you mind know what Hanukkah is? And this is a celebration of the cleansing of the temple, the restoration of the temple after this event. All right? So this is just a... This is like 168, 167 to 160. All of this is happening here. Very good. All right. So Antiochus is trying to force all the Jews. All right. All the Jews essentially become Greeks. Now let's read 12.6 here. Mattathias starts revolt and discussion of his lineage. Now at that time there was one whose name was Mattathias, who dwelt at Modin, the son of John, the son of Simeon, the son of Asmoneus, a priest of the order of Joiarib, and a citizen of Jerusalem. Now let's pause there, okay? Priest of the order of Joiarib. What does that probably mean? Think back to our very first discussion. Actually, we didn't get it to our second discussion. All right? If you look at 1 Chronicles 24. Go there real quick. Okay. So remember the 24 divisions of the priests. All right. This is not the high priest. This is the other priests, all right? And so the high priest has a specific job, but the other priests have jobs to keep the temple going and do a lot of the other worship that the high priest doesn't do and sacrificing that the high priest doesn't do, because he doesn't do everything, all right? And so there's 24 divisions of that. We see that pop up in at least a couple places in the New Testament, all right? And so this is where in 1 Chronicles 24, David is organizing the priests. And remember, we discussed this 2 weeks ago, where Eleazar, right, all of these priests are from either Eleazar or Ithamar, because the other two sons of Aaron, God killed for sin. Eleazar and Ithamar. Eleazar had, of the 24, 16 of the sons. Ithamar had 8 of the sons. All right. And so you've got there in 1 Chronicles 24, verse 7, they're now going to split. They're going to cast lots to see what's the order of the worship of the priest to work in the temple. Who's the first one? Joiarib. Or here, as it says, Jehoiarib. All right. And so Mattathias is specifically of this division. Okay. That's why that's there. Okay. So he is a priest. He's not a high priest. You won't see Jehoiarib in the Zadokite lineage. All right. He's not a high priest. But he is in the priestly lineage in that first division of the priest in 1 Chronicles 24. Now back to Josephus. He had 5 sons, John, who was called Gaddis, and Simon, who was called Matthes, and Judas, who was called Maccabeus. All right. The Maccabean revolt, named after him. He was their first general. Eleazar, who was called Auron, and Jonathan, who was called Apphus. Oh, I didn't skip any. There you go. So there's the sons of Mattathias. So Mattathias is the father of Judas Maccabeus. Now this Mattathias lamented to his children the sad state of their affairs, and the ravage made in the city, and the plundering of the temple, and the calamities the multitude were under. And he told them that it was better for them to die for the laws of their country than to live so ingloriously as they then did. So Antiochus is trying to get the whole country to convert over, leave Judaism, kill it, to become Greek, essentially. Some give in, all right? Mattathias, not. Very upset about all of this, all right? And ultimately the revolt starts, which we don't have a selection from here. The revolt starts because they try to get Mattathias to sacrifice on a pagan altar. Mattathias refuses to do this. And so then another Jew comes and sacrifices, and Mattathias picks up a weapon and kills the guy on the spot, all right? Think back to Phinehas, all right? Same idea. And if we think about Mattathias from a biblical standpoint, step away from the history and whatever biases Josephus might have, or even the writer of 1st, 2nd Maccabees, we look at this and we should be sympathetic to this character, right? Because you've got a group of faithful Jews, all right, trying to say, no, I would rather die than not obey the law of God. Okay? Now us, we don't have quite the same problem, right? Because we're not under the law as Christian Gentiles. But then there was no Jesus yet. Alright? They were all under the law. They had to do this. And Mattathias was faithful. Alright? Now, should he have killed the guy? I don't know. Maybe. Alright? Phinehas did. He had a good example to follow. All right, so it's hard to blame him. Now, these events in Josephus, if you get a copy of the Apocrypha, these are in both 1 Maccabees and 2 Maccabees. All right, 1 Maccabees and 2 Maccabees cover similar periods written by different people. All right, so it's not like 1 and 2 Kings. All right, 2 books about the same thing. And so what you've got then is you've got a revolt. So you've got an outside country coming and trying to change the religion of the Jews. What do they do? We should look at this as generally a positive thing. All right? Generally a positive thing. Where the Jews say, no, we're not going to do it. And then there was a revolt, right? At that point, we've got violence in the mix. And it stays quite violent for a while. Mattathias dies. Judas takes over. After Judas takes over, Jonathan takes over. And after Jonathan, Simon take over. And I think we'll see all of them in our reading. All right. Any questions about that? So we now, at this point, we have the temple polluted. Pigs sacrificed. Temple raided. The country in extreme danger. All right. The revolt about to start. Now, next reading. And this is probably where we'll be done today. All right. In this reading, I chose it because this is, from what some others have said, and as far as I can tell, it seems to be true. This is the first instance where we have the mention of a high priest that is not of the proper line. This is at this point that we really have that kind of problem. So this is Josephus, Antiquity of the Jews, 12:9. So just a little bit after it in the same chapter. So the Judas is, the revolt is started at this point. They are not free. They have not yet thrown off the yoke of Greek oppression yet. So there's fighting going on, but it's still in the midst of it. So here's this reading. Accordingly, the king sent to Judas and to those... Who's the king? We'll see you in a second. He sent to Judas and to those who were with him and promised to give them peace and to permit them to make use of and live according to the laws of their fathers, and they gladly received his proposals. And when they had gained security upon oath for their performance, they went out of the temple. So what's going on? The revolt has started. One of the problems with being a ruler is sometimes you have more than one problem, not just the Jews, but other people attacking you as well. So in this particular case, the Greeks decide they're going to make peace with these rebellious Jews and say, okay, you can continue being Jews. But when, and this would be the king you mentioned, Antiochus Eupator, which is the son of Antiochus Epiphanes, who did the sacrificing in the temple, he came into the city, all right? He came into the temple and saw how strong the place was. He broke his oath. He said, I was going to make peace with you. They let him in. Bad move. He sees how strong the place is, but now that he's in with his army, in order to his army, they plucked down the walls to the ground. And when he had done so, he returned to Antioch. All right. He also carried with him Ananias, the high priest, who was also called Menelaus. All right. The problem with Menelaus is he's actually... He's not even a priest or a Levite. He is actually a Benjamite. So this is our first completely wrong tribe high priest. Now, Lysias was kind of a bad guy. So actually, a lot of people wanted him killed anyway. There's some other stuff for you to read there. I want us to jump down to 387. Because this really shows you, I think, some interesting insight into the religion of the Jews at the time and some of the struggles that they had. Let's go back. We'll just continue reading. For Lysias, who was a general in Antiochus's army, advised the king to slay Menelaus if he would have the Jews be quiet and cause him no further disturbance, for that this man was the origin of all the mischief that the Jews had done them by persuading his father to compel the Jews to leave their religion and their fathers. In other words, Menelaus was actively trying to promote syncretism as high priest. Wrong line, wrong religion. All right, bad stuff. So the king sent Menelaus to Berea, city of Syria, and there had him put to death when he had been high priest 10 years. He had been a wicked and an impious man in order to get this government to himself and had compelled his nation to transgress their own laws. Pause for one brief second. Josephus is a Pharisee. All right. So Josephus, reading through this, he's not an unbiased observer. He is a Jew. All right. In his judgment... And I think probably everybody would agree, if you knew what Menelaus had done, you'd also go, yes, Menelaus is a terrible character. But Josephus, as a historian, is not just sitting back and just describing things. He's like, yes, this is a generally terrible guy. Continuing on. After the death of Menelaus, Alcimus, who was called Jachimus, was made high priest. But when King Antiochus, so many names, found that Philip, so many names, he was a guardian put in charge of by Antiochus the Fourth, doesn't matter, had already possessed himself of the government, he made war against him and subdued him and took him and slew him. Here's the important part. Now, as to Ananias, the son of the high priest, who, as we before informed you, was left a child when his father died, when he saw that the king had slain his uncle, all right, slain his uncle, Menelaus, and gave the high priesthood to Alcimus, who was not of the high priest stock, but was induced by Lysias to translate the dignity from his family to another house, he fled to Ptolemy, king of Egypt. And when he found he was great esteem with him and with his wife Cleopatra, he desired and obtained a place in the nomus of Heliopolis, wherein he built a temple like to that of Jerusalem, of which therefore we shall hereafter give an account, and a place more proper for it. And he does talk about it later. Oh, okay. So what is all this stuff? Ananias... And actually, I might have spoken wrong. Menelaus might have been okay. Alcimus might have been the Benjamite. Both of them might have been in the wrong here. Ananias, not getting what he wants, goes and, what do you do when you don't get what you want? Well, I'm just going to go start my own temple in Egypt. And that temple stayed around for a little while. All right. And so Egypt, Alexandria was known, but there's lots of Jews there. And so Onias goes and he forms another temple. So at this point, we have a semi-Jewish but not acceptable temple in Samaria, Mount Gerizim. All right. Remember when Jesus has this discussion with the Samaritan woman of which mountain should we worship on? That's related to that. Now we have another temple being founded in Egypt. All right. Now, according to the Old Testament, we would look at that and go, no, that was never authorized. This is not an appropriate thing to do. But this is what is happening in some of the religious life of the Jews, of the priesthood. And it's very problematic. What happens next, which we'll talk about next time because we're out of time, and what you have readings for in Levites and Priesthood 3. All right. You have what is potentially another problem. Maybe it's not a problem. Depends on your view of things. But potentially another problem. All right. Here's these texts here. You can go read around them in the Maccabees. All right. It is, and that is, okay, when ultimately Judah and then have more success, what's going to happen with the priesthood? Judah Maccabeus has never made a priest. Never made the high priest. But his brother Jonathan and then his brother Simon are. None of them of the high priestly clan. So think, all right? Just consider it, because this is not necessarily a open and shut case, all right? If you've got the line of Zadok is corrupt and some other priests come in and ultimately fix it, should those priests become the high priest of Jerusalem? When the Zadokites, if they've rejected God and they've started working with the Greeks, maybe. In 1 Maccabees and 2 Maccabees, those books, which are in the Apocrypha, if you read them, they seem to me to be like, and others, they seem to be like an apology for why this is okay. All right? Remember Phinehas, through all of his zeal, he saved the nation. All right? He did it. Because there was some sin going on, and he dealt with it. You know who's like Phinehas? Judas Maccabeus. Lots of sin going on. He comes in and he saves the nation. Can you blame him for making Jonathan, his brother, who also did the same, and then Simon after him, high priest? Even if they're not of the line of Zadok. You can see where this could cause religious divisions in Judaism. Where some people would be like, no, Ezekiel, Zadok, David, Zadok. And others like, they defected. But here's some other Levites, some other priests, not even just Levites, priests who were faithful and restored the country. All right. Is God with them? Of course. They won. Right? This is ultimately the argument. So anyway, that's the text of 1 Maccabees. All right. And so we'll discuss that. What we'll also do is, because ultimately where we're going with this, is to get into Herod. All right. We are in the middle of, I'll remind you, unless you've forgotten, we're in the middle of a study of Revelation. It's been a few weeks. All right. What we're ultimately going to is this basic notion. All right. That you've got in like 12 and 13, you've got the dragon, which is Satan. Then you have a first beast and you have a second beast. That second beast, all right, has delegated royal authority from the first beast. All right. Is he as powerful as the first beast? No. But he has delegated royal authority, and he's trying to get everybody to obey the first beast. All right? Where I'm ultimately going, because I don't mind showing my hand, where I'm ultimately going is, this is exactly what Herod did, and his whole line. All right? The Romans, they loved Herod. Herod loved the Romans. All right? You know who doesn't love the Romans? Clearly John. Okay? So that's ultimately where we're going in this, right? To see this pattern of there's issues within the priesthood, there's issues when foreign leaders or even Jewish leaders, theoretically, ultimately get charge of the temple. All right. So that's what we'll start on next time before we actually jump back in Revelation. Because I think it makes a really compelling case and I think really helps our understanding of Revelation 13. As much as I would love to just keep staying in intertestamental literature, I think it's interesting. And there's more for me to learn there. Lots more. Can't stay in it forever. This is a Bible study. And we don't consider 1st and 2nd Maccabees part of the Bible. So, any questions? Yeah.
So, the stuff that we read from Josephus, he wasn't actually a Nazi.
That's correct.
Is there any idea where that's coming from? Just passed down, I guess, or...
Good question. So a lot of 1st and 2nd Maccabees is probably going to be a source for Josephus. But there would also be other works as well. So 1st and 2nd Maccabees would be written, most people say, put like in the 1st century BC. Josephus was the 1st century AD. Right? So Josephus had access to all this stuff. And if you go read 2nd Maccabees... The author of 2 Maccabees says that his book is like a condensation of so much, much larger work. So there's plenty of people writing about this stuff, apparently. All right. And so Josephus, in his Antiquity of the Jews, which is going to cover a lot of, a long time where he's not alive, he's got historical sources. And part of them are going to be the Maccabee books. Part of them are going to be other books as well. But also, he also sometimes makes references to the records that the priests keep in terms of their lineage. As we discussed, lineage is super important. They apparently kept records of things. That's how you keep lineage stuff straight. So he's got lots of sources available to him. He won't always be right, of course. But that's ultimately, he's going to get a lot of his information from Maccabees. And most of what you find in the Maccabees, you will find paralleled in Josephus somewhere. All right. We just like all the stuff we well, at least most of the stuff we read today in Josephus, you can find in the Maccabees as well. And this stuff we'll read next time in Maccabees, you can find in Josephus. So, yeah, he is an interested observer at this point. The War of the Jews is different. He was alive at that time and was a witness to a lot of these. He was in the Jewish army. He was a commander in the Jewish army and lost. And after that, he survived the whole thing, obviously. He survived, switched essentially to the Roman side and all his works. And so he would have been eyewitness to that. But this stuff, no, this is much later. And so he just used other sources. Traditions and all that stuff. Okay? Any other questions, thoughts? Okay. Next time, we actually get to the New Testament. Okay.
Can we get to Revelation?
No. Maybe. Next time after that. Okay. Frank, can you pray for us, please?